We have now one more item on this session's agenda, which is a plenary discussion. May I invite the speakers of session two to come to the podium and prepare themselves to answer any questions from the audience. So can I have the speakers for today's presentations? It should be seven altogether, and I also invite Mr. Jianshan Ji from the FAO also to take the floor in order to answer any questions on behalf of the FAO. Okay, but before we start, I would just remind you of the two side events that will take place afterwards, starting at 6 o'clock in the neighboring rooms, I assume. So please visit them as well. Okay, now we have today had seven very interesting presentations in this session. So far, we didn't set aside any space for questions or reflections from the audience, but I'm confident that you have some. Absolutely. It has been a remarkable review, and if there are no questions, then I will be very surprised. So I just open the floor for any question. Those who have questions, there are microphones around in the room. Please state your name and where you're coming from, and ask the clear question, and then we will see who of the speakers who feel responsible for replying or are the best to reply. So I leave the floor to you. Any questions, any reflections that you want to share with all the other colleagues? Over here, please, sir, there's a microphone just behind you.
It is only a reflection. My name is Fer Sharif Sadek from Egypt. My reflections, it is the feed security. Egypt, as example, if it's producing 10 fish, we are producing 7 from aquaculture, from the 10, 2 fish coming from fisheries, and 1 it is imported. The 7 fish, half of the 7 fish, it is tilapia. And the margin profit of tilapia today, it is small. As example, the cost production of 1 kilo of tilapia is around $1. We are selling for 1.3. Due that the cost of the most important cost is coming from feed, we got an agreement with Sudan to have around 100,000 hectares of soya bean and corn, so like that Egypt can import this production for the animal production. And that the agreement between African country, it will be very benefits concerning the food security. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone from the panel want to reflect further on the issue? If not, we have a question down here, sir.
Yes, my name is Mike Hine. I'm from France. There have been excellent presentations today, which I've really enjoyed, but there's been one thing that's missing, and that's plants. We've heard all these presentations about animals. Where are the plants? Where's the role of FAO in plants? And bearing in mind that with world population growth, we're likely to be going nearer and nearer to the bottom of the food chain towards algae and things like that to eat. Could somebody please explain why we don't hear about plants?
A very good question. Perhaps I give the floor first to Mr. Jianshan Ji from the FAO, and then perhaps some of the other panelists as well can comment.
Yes. Before I would like to invite my colleague to answer to your question regarding the seaweeds and aquatic plants, I would like to give you some figure. This morning, the presentation I did is mostly focused on the food fish production. In fact, the statistic FAO received on in 2008 data, it was indicated that 68 million of total output from aquaculture, of which 52.5 million tons are from fish, crustacean, aquatic animals. That means some 60 million tons are aquatic plants, mainly seaweeds. This is an important part, but most of the seaweed nowadays are used for industrial use, for pharmaceutical, for food processing, and so on. But still, a big portion is consumed directed by human beings as the food, direct food, especially in Asia, for Northeast Asia part, and also Southeast Asia part. So in this regard, I would like to say FAO and all the countries that do consider seaweed, aquatic plants, an important part of the aquaculture production. It's only the review or the presentation given was more talking about the food fish, but in the actual food text, it covers the aquatic plants. Maybe my colleague Sandro, Lovatelli, who is our specialist covering this area, to supplement, to add anything more. Thank you.
Well, what I would like to add is that, Judge Johnson has mentioned, the full reports, the regional reports, and the global report will be available for consultation probably towards the end of the year when we put it together. And those reports do cover the aquatic plants, microalgae. What I would like to add is that towards the end of this year, FAO is organizing an important gathering, which, funny enough, is going to be held in Spain, not necessarily the best country for when we talk about algae production. But anyway, there will be an international meeting there to bring together experts from across the globe to discuss the production of macroalgae and to see, you know, what are the kind of actions that FAO can take at the global basis to increase the production and utilizations of microalgae. So, you know, please keep an eye open on the FAO website, and within, I think, the next few weeks, there will be additional information on microalgae. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification. Dr. Da Silva wanted the floor.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I just thought that Asia-Pacific, I did deal with a bit on production, etc. I might add it's a very, very important activity in rural communities, marine communities. It's a low-cost investment. And it's also a very family-based activity where the women folk get involved in preparing the ropes and the drying of the seaweed before processing. Unfortunately, I had only 15 minutes extra. If I had 5 more minutes, I would expand a little more.
Thank you for that one. I had one behind here, then one here, and then there. First, sir.
Thank you. My name is Khalid Salih from South Africa. And my question is basically around certification. It was mentioned in the previous talk that certification is encouraged in terms of promoting sustainability of the industry. As coming from Africa and South Africa, and I guess many other small-scale farmers, there is a concern in terms of compliance and the cost associated to it, specifically seeing that the certification process is being supported by the markets in the big retailers. And our concern is basically, how would we be gain access to the market trends, especially in terms of the cost associated to it, for small-scale farmers, if it is encouraged that we should participate in the wider supply chain.
Yeah. Who feels to comment? Okay. It seems like that the most of the speakers goes that way, so it was a little bit... Could you please repeat the core of your question?
I'm not going to tell the whole story again. Basically, just how are we going to look at certification and the cost of it, specifically for small-scale farmers, in order for them to gain access to the market development in terms of certification.
Okay. The question was, how do you deal with certification and the cost of certification, in particular to small-scale farmers?
I think this question will be dealt with in the side events tomorrow in more detail. None of the reviews touch this, but I might add that in the Asia-Pacific, where the farming is small-scale, what we are trying to do is to form the clusters so that we get cluster certification for the whole group of farmers rather than individuals, thereby reducing the cost or making it very affordable to that cluster. But I think it's best to talk about this at the side event when it will be dealt in very detail.
Okay, thank you. Sir.
My name is Peter Edwards from the Asian Institute of Technology. I'd like to return back to this issue of aquatic plants because I believe there's a huge gap in the collection of statistics on aquatic plants because most of the ones that are recorded are basically seaweeds. There's a whole group missing, and these are aquatic macrophytes from fresh water. And water spinach is the best example, Ipomoea aquatica. This is a major vegetable in most countries in Southeast Asia. And I don't believe it's recorded in national statistics because the aggies ignore anything that comes from water. And most aquaculturists were trained as zoologists. I'm an exception. I used to be a botanist. And so they can't handle aquatic plants. So it falls between the stool, and it's hugely important for national food security, especially for poor people. It's the major vegetable in some countries. For example, Cambodia, I'm quite convinced it's the major vegetable.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Edwards. Yes, it is true that aquatic plants, freshwater, the macrophytes, in many cases, they are very important, no doubt. But in many cases, in the national classification of statistics, it's not considered fishery products. So it is not within the jurisdiction of fisheries department. So this is why it is not being reported as part of the aquatic production reports. So I think what your question about its importance, there's no argument. Yeah. I'm not sure it is recorded by agriculture either. It is something, a gray area. Yeah. It is a gray area. Maybe the national authorities will have to look into this. From this conference, maybe one of the suggestions can be made. Yeah, take your point. Thank you.
I think this is the time we say point taken.
Allow me to add something to what was said by Mr. Gia. Of course, we share the idea with you that aquatic plants are very much important, and as we are talking about farming the waters, we have to include the aquatic plant. Anyway, a good portion of this aquatic plant is considered a good food source in several countries. In other countries, it is used for industry, for cosmetics, for whatever. In the Near East and North Africa, we have one example in Egypt in which they started to, on a pilot scale, they started to culture aquatic plants in the integrated system I spoke about. But I believe that all countries should give more attention to this area and to start to produce cheap and nutritive source of food for humans. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Before I give the floor now to Infante, I just want to recall that some of you had asked for the floor. I have number 2 up there, and then I have number 3 there. Number 2 is there. You, sir, you're number 2 now. number 3, number 4, number 5, the lady over there, number 6 behind there, number 7 behind there. So I just want to be a little bit patient. There are a lot of people in front of you in the speaking order. Rodrigo, please.
Thank you very much. Rodrigo Infante from Chile. My congratulations for all the presentations, which I think were very good. I just have a reflection. I don't know if any of the speakers want to comment about. I think that all of the presentations were very keen in terms of the big amount of benefits that the aquaculture industry has regionally and locally. But on the other side, the public perception that we have from the people, the normal people in the street, it's not as good for the industry. And I think that in order to make this industry viable and really accepted by everybody in the future, which is, I think, a key issue in order to have the development of it go further, I think that we need to do or change something in the strategy. It's not a thing that we do not know. There's plenty of information out there, but something in conveying that message it's failing. I would say that after decades of development of the industry, we have not reached to that point where we have this public acceptance. So I don't know if anybody would want to comment on what are the reflections they have in relation, what things are failing in relation to achieve that. Thank you.
Anyone in the panel want to reflect together with Mr. Infante on that issue? If not, I have 7 now on the list of speakers and about half an hour left. So I think we just continue. Then, sir, you in front, please.
I'm Eknath from India. Again, compliments to the speakers for excellent presentation. But my perception was all the presentations ended with a positive note, except the presentation from LAC. It said more of difficulties and difficulties and difficulties, but at the same time you were telling about the way forward. But even that way forward was sort of helplessness was there. But if you see over the past 10 years, there must have been some changes which were better than maybe 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. Is there any optimism at all for you to develop aquaculture in your LAC? Thank you.
I think you should reply to that.
Yes. I'm sorry if I sounded pessimistic. I'm not pessimistic at all. The thing is that one has to have in 20 minutes an outline what are the main issues that we're concerned with. And to my mind, the issues that I put forward are some things that have to be dealt with and have to be tackled if we want to improve our performance for the future. But that has nothing to do with being extremely optimistic about what will happen in Latin America, for sure. I said that we see that we have the space, the climate conditions, the environment, the people, the infrastructure, and everything else is already in place. My obligation towards you was to highlight as well where are the problems. And I'm sorry if I sounded pessimistic. I'm not at all.
Thank you for that clarification. Sir, no, not you, sir.
Hello, Yogi Carlsfeld from Canada and Brazil, I suppose. I thought the talks were very, very impressive. Thanks very much. One thing I was wondering, though, is, of course, there are global reviews or regional reviews, but I wonder, and there's always some talk about food security and benefits to the poor. But I found that the data, of course, the way it's presented, you lose that whole portion of, you know, how do the poor really get affected? You know, where does the food security to those people really come into this question? You know, if we talk about the global production from a, you know, in tons and stuff like that. Because there's lots, of course, there's livelihood benefits and there are potential, you know, own consumption kind of benefits to these people. Now, if we talk only in these larger formats, does that cause damage towards policies or, say, research programs for, you know, targeting that class of the people or those beneficiaries? So I was wondering, are there plans in these, hidden within these talks or within these programs, which can highlight those questions a bit more clearly for someone like myself.
Yeah. As I mentioned in my presentation, that, you know, getting precise information in terms of agriculture's contribution to food security, employment generation, and poverty elevation is an issue. This is an issue. What, in the absence of that, you know, we're using various statistics like employment, per capita, consumption, all of that. And if you recall, you know, I also said in my presentation that FAO has recently done some work, you know, in this particular area. They've come up with an assessment framework, which hopefully will be a better way of assessing, you know, agriculture's contribution. And the second one is looking at small-scale agriculture's contribution in these various areas. As I said, right now, in absence, you know, people are just sort of coming up with numbers about the best estimates that one can come up with. But this is something which is work in progress and has to be pursued, you know.
Sorry, just a few words add to what Imtiaz said. Picking up this food security parts, day after tomorrow, in session, one of the sessions we'll be dealing with this one. As Imtiaz pointed out, that FAO has done some case studies, if not covering a global level, at least certain regions, certain countries have been examined. So, in that report, maybe some case studies will be presented. The panel members also did their review through literature review of available documented results that will be presented in that session. Thank you.
Thank you. And I also think there is a thematic issue, a session on that issue in particular. First, sir, then the lady afterwards.
Thank you. Myself, Dhirendra Thakur from ASEAN Institute of Technology, Thailand. I have a question about the issue which all the distinguished speaker has mentioned since morning, and that is the climate change impact to aquaculture. We all say that temperature, sea level rise, precipitation pattern, that will be affecting the aquaculture. And we have been listening to this for quite some time. My question is that, do we have precise information, research-based information, to say that how it is going to impact the aquaculture sector? Many colleagues in aquaculture field itself, they say that if the temperature, air temperature rises 2 degrees centigrade in 50 years, water temperature will be little increase and shrimp production may increase in Thailand. So my question is that what kind of research data we have or we are starting to work in that area? Because if we want to know the climate change impact, it has to be the local-based information. The climate change impact in British Columbia will be very different from what will happen to Gulf of Thailand. Adaptation will be at the local level. So whatever information we need to collect, it has to be research-based information from the local. I would like to bring to the notice of the distinguished speakers and also to the floor that if anybody working in that direction, we have started some small work and we will be happy to discuss it further. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Professor Silva.
Yeah, there'll be a, I don't know what you call it, invited guest lecture on climate change tomorrow or day after. And you are also welcome to go and look at the posters which are already up. I think I noticed about 5 posters on the work going on. Only thing which I would like to tell is that please don't use the word precise. I don't think we will have any precision in predicting these things. What we can be is as accurate as possible. So tomorrow, day after, I think it will be there. And already there are some posters up. As for the work going on in the region, some work going on.
Okay, thank you. I have 7 more questions and 25 minutes to go. Madam, please.
Thank you. My name is Sally Ananya Sarang Pimon, director of the Food School. And my question actually has sort of related to some previous questions, but what I'd like to do is to bring back the focus to the people. Because the title of this conference is Farming the Waters for People and Food, and we've been focusing a lot on the food itself and the technology, but I feel that nothing personal, the presentations were excellent, but it appears to me there's not as much yet on a discussion on the people themselves, and also I wanted to provide a gender balance to the whole discussion. But anyway, my questions have to do with how do we measure the benefits of all these efforts to the people who really need it? For example, at what point do we say that we have alleviated poverty or even provided enough opportunities for First Nations or small-scale farmers or for the women in general? These are the sort of things I'm mulling over. I've done a lot of assessments, and it appears to me with environment, you have there are requirements for environmental impact assessment. Social systems, no requirements yet for social impact assessment, or even indices, for example, for quality of life, or even how much improvement or how sustainable or the livelihood of a particular community has become. So just some thoughts and would be welcome.
Thank you very much. Yes, please.
Yeah, I already responded to the previous speaker, but what I would like to mention is you're absolutely correct. You know, the focus has to be on people and gender and what is happening. If it's not benefiting people, then why is it that countries are involved in this particular operation? You know, I also mentioned to you about these two pieces of work that FAO is involved in, and I don't know whether Nathaniel is here or. Because he's the one who's done a recent sort of a review on assessment of agriculture's contribution to food security, gender, employment, all the stuff. It's a very highly technical, highly complicated, you know, kind of work, and it'll need further review. If he's around, he can sort of shed more light on this one. And the second one that I mentioned about small scale agriculture's contribution, if Melba is around, this is work in progress. And I'm sure, you know, once the report is out, it's going to be extremely helpful and, to an extent, you know, will address the issues that have been raised, you know, for a long time or have been raised for a long time.
Okay, thank you. Sir, if you allow me, there is a separate question on poverty elevation as well. So perhaps we can develop that question and perhaps we will get a better answer later on, if you don't mind. Then I have the gentleman ready at the microphone on my left. Please, sir.
My name is Gerald Billings from Fiji in the South Pacific. Thank you very much for the great presentations that we have heard today. We are very appreciative from our part of the world. My question is on climate change. While the whole world is planting trees in reference to the carbon sink, is there any benefits for us in the Pacific to go ahead and start planting mangroves and other aquatic plants and seaweeds, etc., to contribute to that carbon sink?
Anyone... Yeah, I'm looking at
I like microphones. Gerald, this, as I mentioned earlier, these issues will be dealt at the special session and the speech, so don't worry. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd just like to make a brief comment. John Forster, who's an aquaculture consultant with a very long history in aquaculture, recently did a short piece in the magazine Global Aquaculture Advocate. And in that, he notes that we're going to need to see increased seafood production, and we all know that. But we're also going to need to see dramatic increases in food production that's terrestrially based. He questions whether we'll be able to do that on the planet. He goes further to say that the world's oceans have about 96% of the water. They cover about 70% of the surface. If about 2% of them, we could produce food the equivalent of all that that's produced in terrestrial plant agriculture. So I thought that was a thought-provoking observation. And a side benefit to that is you would absorb a lot of carbon from the ocean, which in turn would then enable it to absorb more from the atmosphere.
Thank you very much. Then I have the gentleman here, and your next one.
My name is Max Terrell. I'm from the Bay Institute in Stockholm. I joined you the presentations here today. And I have one question and one comment. And first, a comment to the gentleman about the mangroves. Mangroves are always good to plant, so go ahead and do that. And then with respect to the seaweed discussion, I think we are missing one key point here, and that is the digestibility about seaweeds. And I think there are more research that need to be done before we can account that to be a great future food source for us human. But it can already now be used as feed for animals that then we can utilize as food. And then I had one question, but it just popped my mind here. So I'm satisfied with that.
Okay. Satisfied with reflection. Thanks very much. I have now six further questions here, and we have roughly 20 minutes to go. So for the time being, I'm not taking more questions, rather to make sure that those who are asked for the floor gets the floor. Sir.
I'm Edgar Brun from Norway. So I want to move to Europe for a while. First of all, I would thank you all for excellent presentations, although my head or hard disk is full. Many of you have mentioned diseases as a constraint or a challenge for aquaculture. And in Europe, there's something called, or in the EU, it's called prevention is better than cure. And two of you, or for two of these talks, one from Europe and the FIO, has mentioned veterinary medication as almost a constraint or a challenge for especially Europe. And I was wondering why you regard this as a constraint. I know there should be available medication to cope with diseases. But if we look at this EU statement, prevention is better than cure, then we focus on biosecurity. And especially in Europe, shouldn't we try to emphasize this aspect a lot more and actually see it as a benefit that there is quite restricted regulation on medication, antibiotics, and that such things in aquaculture, and rather focus on biosecurity, vaccination, and so on. Thank you.
Thank you. Varadi, you want to comment?
Well, actually, the salmon industry is somehow different from some other industries which are producing so-called, as we say, mum species, minor species. And the problem is with these species, which don't represent a big share of aquaculture, and actually there are no licensed veterinary medicines for these species. And there are, of course, certain opportunities, the cascade principles. I don't want to go into details, but we feel that those farmers who are producing these so-called mum species, they cannot afford to pay for the long, they cannot pay for the procedure, which is very expensive, and it takes a long time. And this is not really the problem of the salmon industry. However, a lot of research has been done following the principle prevention rather than cure, and we use immunostimulants and vaccination, even trying for some other species.
Okay, thank you very much. Now I have only 10 minutes left of this session, and I have five more questions. I'm sorry. Now all the hands come in the air. Perhaps you will have to leave some of the questions to other sessions. And I have now the gentleman that I turned down last time. He's now having the floor. Then I have one over here somewhere. Questions out? Okay, fine. And then over there, in front here, and back there, that will probably be the last one, sir. Sir, please.
Thank you, and thank you to presenters. I thought today's presentation was very very informative and useful. My name is Amrit Bhart. I'm with the Asian Institute of Technology. I have a couple of questions, maybe reflection and questions together.
Please, one question. We are short of time.
Okay, one question. It's been 10 years since our last, declaration, Bangkok Declaration, and I presume a lot of progress has been made, and today's presentation, at the second presentation, tried to outline some of the declarations and the outcomes. What I'm wondering is that why we didn't set more specific indicators or targets so that we would have been able to measure after 10 years what really has happened. And at this point, we're talking about, yes, we're making some progress. Maybe we made some progress. But what is it really we've done, I think, is data poor. So it would have been very useful to have set some sort of target and some sort of indicators from the beginning. So as we think about now Phuket Consensus, I hope we can do better in 10 years when we come back, that we have some way of measuring what we have done. And if we haven't done, then maybe talk about how do we account for what we haven't done and then make further progress. I guess that's more of a comment, but any panelists can respond to that.
Do you want a short reply, or should we just say that that was a good message for the coming days and we'll bear that in mind for the...
Your points were well taken. As I said in the morning, in your bag you will find the drafts for the Phuket Consensus paper. We are seeking suggestions, revisions. So I do hope you will provide some constructive, not only the idea how the measurements can be done, what would be the applicable, measurable indicators. I remember 10 years ago I was in Bangkok. It was spent a lot of time at length discussions, but could not agree on each other. So that was why it was avoided. But it is a good point. Is how. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Then I have the gentleman over here, please.
Thank you. My name is James Sparrow from the United States. I'm with Ocean Conservancy. My question is, what efforts do you all see around the world for different states to use aquaculture not as a matter of food production, but maybe, as our colleague from Fiji mentioned, as for climate change impacts? What about other sort of nutrient mitigation measures, state-sponsored, maybe business partnerships with governments to, mitigate some of these problems that we're having with dead zones, et cetera? And is there any sort of state-run initiatives that you guys see around the world that are sort of working on some of these issues rather than just thinking about food production? Thank you.
Anyone on the panel want to...
Good question. I don't think the reviews dealt with specific instances, but there are many specific instances which have been pointed out on and off how aquaculture is helping mitigate environmental negative impacts. For example, let me tell you, say the increase in mariculture in the Asia Pacific is bringing about a decrease in the fishing and the coral blasting of coral fish, which was supplying the market 10 years ago. And this has very positive environmental impacts and on biodiversity, because there is less coral blasting, therefore these fragile habitats are maintained, therefore the biodiversity is maintained. So there are many, many instances, but I am not sure whether there are specific regional activities taking place in that sense. But there are Does that answer you?
Okay. Thank you very much. Then I have the gentleman there. Yes, please.
Hi, my name is Javier Martinez Cordero from Mexico. First of all, I want to congratulate all of you. I have more than a question, reflection. I would like to see in some of the regional reviews the problem of unregulated and unreported aquaculture discussed in detail, because it's really a big problem that makes unreported and unregulated aquaculture is really illegal aquaculture. And in some of our countries and our regions, this is a big issue. And if you think that if you are developing policies and regulations based on inaccurate information, then the problem begins. I'm sure for probably for some regions like North America and Europe, this is not such a big problem. But in some of our regions, the farmers really have more the incentive for not being not reporting, not being regulated, rather than being legal. So it's just a comment, because I didn't see the unregulation and unreported problem discussed in detail. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Anyone in the panel want to comment on that? No? Okay, Jetta.
Seems I liked more than you. Send the microphone. Yes, I would say the reporting of aquaculture and the statistic data collection has been always a shortcoming of the sector in general. We have observed and has been always recommended by various forums that states should take measures to improve the situation. We observed also gradual improvements in certain countries. Now we are getting more reports. It takes time. It's a kind part of the regulatory framework as well as the institutional framework at the national level. It is a good point, but I may not be in full agreement with you with regard to this word you used, illegal. Unreported, unregulated, yes, there are cases, but they should not be considered illegal. I can't agree. Maybe this is something different from fishing activities. We have the IUU fishing. We should not apply or borrow the same concept to aquaculture. Thank you.
Thank you. I had a question somewhere around here, did I? Sir, did you ask for the floor?
Hi, I'm Costa Pierce from the University of Rhode Island in the United States. My question was, I think Dr. Ahmad brought it up, but my question is directed to Dr. Satya. The Nairobi Declaration was pretty stringent on exotic species, and I know there's been a constant concern about the gift tilapia and other exotic species such as the carps coming into Africa. And there was mention, and I'd like to reflect on Professor De Silva's presentation also, that the Asia-Pacific aquaculture boom is mainly driven by exotics and improved species. So I'm hearing now that we're opening the door a little bit to the gift tilapias or improved species, genetically improved species by conventional animal breeding, coming to Africa. So I'd like to hear your comments about that. Maybe just one other reflection. There's during the ICLARM days in Malawi, there was some fairly stringent words being used to prevent the carps ever coming to Africa, no matter what kind of benefits they could provide to the poor people. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. First, I'd like to say that with regards to exotic species, their contribution.
Put the microphone towards them.
Yes, with regards to exotic species, their contribution to aquaculture production in Africa is decreasing every year for all of them. Take carp, for example. In 2003, it was 4.1%. In 2008, it's 1.4%. With regards to the gift tilapia, I think African countries had made up their minds that they don't want the gift tilapia. Those who are smuggling the gift tilapia into Africa are doing that behind the back of the other people. And that is why we have this initiative, which we call the Volta Lake Cooperative Research Program for the improvement of the Nile tilapia by FAO, World Fish Center, and six countries. Is to make sure that those African countries develop their selective breeding. And this is done not only among those six countries, but several countries in Africa are working with World Fish Center, you know, to do this, carry out this type of work in their different countries. So the Nairobi Declaration is still valid for Sub-Saharan Africa. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And then I had a gentleman there who now gets the last question.
I am Bakhtiar Karimov from Uzbekistan. There was very interesting presentations about the aquaculture situation in the world. But one very large part of our planet was not reported. That is former Soviet Union, including Central Asia and Caucasus. My request is next time, please consider also inclusion of our region also into the report agenda. Yeah, that will be very maybe useful also for us and also for the whole world. This is just request, not question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. I think that's noted from the FAO, so make sure that we get it on. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've looked carefully at my watch during the session, and at least my watch is now 1800 sharp. So I think we managed to stick to the timetable. I'll thank the panelists here, the speakers for today, for being able to reply to most of the questions. I thank the audience to have come up with the questions. Now there are two sides event that I would encourage you to visit. To make sure you also get the input from them. And by then, I just close today's program session from this podium and wish you a good evening and see you all tomorrow morning. Thank you.